From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis, guest host of this edition of PC USA. In a pledge to boost food production and ensure food security in Africa, the African Development Bank, in partnership with the International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD, recently held a leaders' dialogue. In a speech at the meeting, African Development Bank President Dr. Akinwumi Atsina said that 246 million Africans go to bed hungry each day. He pointed out that sub-Saharan Africa has a quarter of the world's arable land but only produces 10% of its agricultural output. The low productivity of staple crops makes African agriculture uncompetitive. As a result, he says, the continent imports one-third of the calories that it consumes. This makes food systems more vulnerable and dependent on external food supply chains. And while COVID-19 has severely impacted Africa's food security, for many in Africa, the risk of dying from hunger is much higher than the risk of dying from COVID-19. African leaders agree that innovative technology is a big key to ensuring food security in Africa. In some countries on the continent, farmers' crops have been improved to survive drought and increase crop yields using technological advances. In addition, leaders have laid the foundation for Africa to present a unified voice to step up efforts and partnerships towards reaching the UN's Sustainable Development Goals by the year 2030. The African Development Bank says it will invest $10.4 billion over the next 5 years to boost the development of agricultural value chains and food production in Africa. The bank says it will also invest $1.6 billion in the next 5 years to support 10 strategic crops to drive food security. But they point out that greater amounts of resources are needed to feed Africa. Joining me to discuss the goals and challenges for increased food security in Africa is Atsuko Toda, Acting Vice President of the African Development Bank's Agriculture, Human and Social Capital. Atsuko, thank you so much for joining me.
It's a great pleasure, Kim. Thank you for inviting me.
Just looking back at that leadership's dialogue, what did you find were some of the major highlights regarding improving food systems in Africa through partnerships and even through technology?
Thank you so much, Kim. There are a couple of highlights from the high-level dialogue for Feeding Africa. Number one, and most importantly, it was the opportunity for 17 heads of African states to come together and actually pledge their commitment to the agricultural transformation. Many a times in these countries, there are so many priorities for their resources and for allocation of budget. Agriculture tends to get marginalized. But at the high-level dialogue, Kim, it was an opportunity to hear African heads of states that say that food security is a priority. Nutrition of their populations is critical, and the agricultural transformation is possible by scaling up successes and achievements that are being made. Secondly, as you rightly mentioned, it was a meeting about partnerships. So it's not about development partners working in isolation, but it's about public sector, governments, development partners, and the private sector working together. And then thirdly, there was a great emphasis on achievements already made. If you look at existing technologies, i.e. when we say technologies, there's a number of improved varieties around seeds that are on the shelf that need to be shared with populations through extension advisory services. Also, with regards to the food supply chain, there's been a quiet revolution of small, medium enterprises along the value chain. So the point was to say, while there is achievements or progress being made, that progress is slower and it could be accelerated. So those were some of the highlights coming out of the meeting that took place on the 29th and 30th of April.
Now, Africa has been plagued with food insecurity for so long. What would you say are some of the root causes of food insecurity in Africa? And what are the biggest challenges in fixing these problems?
Some of the root causes would be the fact that yields are extremely low. So when you compare the yields that an average African country gets, and we're not talking about the key production areas, but on an average, we're talking about 50% when we compare it to other countries of Asia and Latin America. So really the intensification of productivity is absolutely critical when it comes to food security. Only when there is a marketable surplus will farmers then be able to provide the quantity and quality of food that's needed to the next step, which includes traders, logistics, and then ultimately to get to processors. Another part of the equation is that not enough food is actually processed on the African continent. So Kim, you mentioned before, with regards to staples that are produced, they're not necessarily processed on the African continent. So ultimately, African countries, many of them are exposed to importing that food, which could be produced and processed on the continent. And particularly in situations like COVID, where everybody's been having a rethink with regards to various supply chains because of, you know, exposure to risk of shipping and all those other connected or associated parts of the value chain, that leaves exposure to food insecurity. And then finally, of course, there are issues around the continent, and these are very much demarcated situations, but there's also issues of security whereby, you know, just in general, in those areas, you have, you know, security problems which are having, and of course, displaced persons. And for them, of course, food insecurity or the lack of food security is an issue of more national security.
That's interesting. Can you talk a little bit more about food supply chains and how they work in Africa? Are they different from other continents?
I think the global food supply chain in general has become much more consolidated, and in the process where if you compare to other continents like Latin America or Asia, where there has been a huge investment in infrastructure, it's become much cheaper to transport food and therefore to bulk and to be able to process and reach markets. In the context of Africa, there is still a need to invest more in infrastructure. Unless we have electricity, unless we have roads that can transport food, unless there is more infrastructure investment, transporting food actually becomes a part of the cost of food. So if we want to really feed populations in a much more affordable fashion, it is very important to invest in infrastructure and get economies of scale. So when there is a competition with regards to prices and scale, African countries are not actually going to the scale it needs to be able to make the food affordable.
And when you're looking for these agricultural opportunities, how do you target where the best opportunities lie?
So the best opportunities lie where there is potential for good agricultural production. And to the point I was making before, where there's irrigation, it's easier to have, you know, one can utilize different cropping seasons and you could have much more production. But the first thing is to identify agricultural production basins which have water, which are much more productive. The second thing is necessarily to ensure that there's post-harvest infrastructure, and then of course storage, good logistics to processing to be able to feed the cities, i.e. in Africa, the population in its urban areas is growing tremendously. Not only is the population growing in general, and it is likely to double by 2050, but also the city's populations in terms of percentage is moving from 40% of the entire population to 50%. So the African cities are also growing very quickly. And within that context of urbanization, you have a real demand pull for processed and easy to access, readily available, easy to process food.
At one time, Zimbabwe was considered the breadbasket, so to speak, for other southern countries. Does Africa have a country or countries that are considered the breadbaskets? And If so, what I know you talked about looking at these agricultural opportunities. How do you tap into that potential?
I think the number one, there are different agroecological zones in Africa, and this doesn't pertain to basically national state boundaries, but there are definitely areas where there's higher production potential. Two, to be able to put the infrastructure that is required to allow farmers to go to scale, to be able to commercialize agriculture. And three, to be able to get the private sector interested in these areas, you do need a political will. And that's why it's so important for governments to have the political will to understand that agriculture is actually at the base of creating jobs and creating wealth in these rural areas. So it's really a combination of strong production potential, strong private sector interest, and strong government that has the will to create the enabling environment necessary to push forward this acceleration of production and processing.
And how do you get countries to work together? Because some of them don't always have the same political will, as you mentioned.
I think one of the great opportunities that Africa has today is the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. And if you look at the goods that are going across borders already in an informal way, a lot of that pertains to food. With the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, more countries intra-regionally in Africa will understand that it makes sense to trade with each other instead of trying to trade with other continents. So the idea is to be able to invest in the infrastructure that makes that trade easier. Sometimes, for example, it's easier for Nigeria to import food from Asia or Latin America rather than just looking to its neighbor in Cameroon, for example. But that's because the infrastructure doesn't allow for that trade to happen. So I think as countries in Africa understand better the opportunities around regional value chains, number one, to invest in the infrastructure allowing transport logistics to happen more readily. And then three, there's a number of informal trade barriers that need to be actually addressed so that it's not that, you know, there's a huge unforeseen or unseen tax for this produce to go across borders. So I think the African Continental Free Trade Agreement is such a massive opportunity, and I'm really hoping that African governments will see that food processing and food trade will be extremely important in that context.
Yes, I hope so too. That sounds like a great opportunity there. And in that, what type of food model would you say that you are working on for the continent?
So the strategy that we are following on the continent as the African Development Bank is called Feed Africa. And Feed Africa is about focusing on a number of priority value chains. What that means is that a value chain is a solution, is from produce to market to consumer. So it's along that entire value chain, there's all kinds of investments that are required. And so part of the strategy is looking at the major crops, staple and cash crops, those that currently are being imported, but yet Africa could be much more competitive in. And that includes rice, maize, soybean, millet, sorghum, cassava. So a number of those type of commodities vis-a-vis those, the ones that Africa exports, which include cashew, cocoa, coffee, tea, horticulture, and seeing how Africa can actually, African countries can be much more competitive, trying to go to scale and trying to ensure that some of these value chains become either top of the export or that Africa can look at local produce, local storage, local processing, and make much more resilient supply chains around that.
Yes, very good. And let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll look at how COVID-19 has affected efforts to improve Africa's value chain.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Atsuko Toda, Acting Vice President of the African Development Bank's Agriculture, Human, and Social Capital. I'm Kim Lewis. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener in Gombe, Nigeria, Bar Inusa Mohammed. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Now back to our program with our guest, Atsuko Toda, Acting Vice President of the African Development Bank's Agriculture, Human, and Social Capital. Atsuko, how has the coronavirus, I know we touched on this a little bit earlier, but how has the coronavirus pandemic affected food security in Africa and your efforts to improve the continent's value chain?
During the coronavirus, the African Development Bank really pivoted its resources to support African governments with those that had fiscal challenges to be able to, you know, address some of the economic resilience measures that needed to be put in place during the COVID crisis. With regards to how it impacted food security, I believe that one of the greatest impacts was the fact that purchasing power was greatly affected. Number one, when it comes to remittances, those slowed down. Number two, when it came to some of the measures that were put in place, you know, people had to stay indoors, especially in the beginning. There's a lot of informal economy that happens, a lot of hustle that goes on the ground where you know, a lot of informal workers, they had to close their shops temporarily, and that put a lot of pressure on informal economy. And number three, with regards to some of the commodity prices, with regards to the imports that we were talking about, whether it be rice, maize, soybean, the commodity prices of these products have slowly gone up. So there's been a bit of inflationary pressure. And all these things actually impact food security for a number of African countries.
When making decisions on policies regarding food production, food security, and new technologies, who is included in the decision-making, such as the farmers? And I believe that 80% of the farmers in Africa are women.
Yes. So when it comes to policy decision-making, agriculture really needs to get much more priority, and that was the whole point about having high-level dialogue and high-level dialogues around getting African leadership to look at and to voice their concerns with regards to food security. At the African Development Bank, we have been making efforts to make sure that whatever we do at the bank is much more inclusive of women, much more inclusive of civil society, to be able to reflect the voice and needs of smallholder farmers. For example, smallholder farmers also in Africa are a huge percentage of the rural population. So it's very important that policy takes their considerations in mind. And also when it comes to private sector, small, medium enterprises make about 85% of food supply chain. So again, it's an area where a lot of work is taking place, but not necessarily is policy always able to embrace and address their needs.
And what are some of the biggest needs right now of the smallholder farmers?
The smallholder farmers need much more support when it comes to access to agro inputs and the right varieties of seed, access to fertilizer, access to finance to be able to be able to apply some of these agro inputs. And most importantly, they need market information to be able to link to their produce to off-takers. So as long as there are companies that are willing to buy, as long as there's, you know, off-takers that are willing to buy their produce, their production will become much more sustainable and over time productivity will increase. But as long as those linkages, access to market is not made, it's extremely hard for smallholder farmers to increase their production.
I know that technology is also a big key in all of this. So
how will they be able to access the new technology out there to really bring themselves up to date with farming techniques?
We're really hoping that with the digital revolution that is taking place, Kim, that much more information will be accessible by these smallholder farmers. In Africa, you'll notice that a lot of farmers do have mobile telephones, and with regards to extension advisory services, information with regards to the climate, information with regards to different available options, it's out there, and it could be made much more available. But again, I think, you know, we have to take a kind of approach whereby the digital, the fourth industrial revolution, i.e. ICT technologies, are much more utilized, especially in the agricultural space, to get that information out there to a large group of farmers that are actually currently not connected.
And when looking at partnering externally, are you looking to partner with larger companies? Or what is the criteria in partnering with companies to bringing technology to the farmer?
With regards to partnering with companies, I think for the African Development Bank, we also have private sector agribusiness investment, and that tends to be for the larger companies just by the nature of what the bank can provide directly to companies. At the same time, when we're talking about the value chain projects, we have the infrastructure we put in place, the policy and enabling business environment that we also work with governments on. All of that is for small, medium enterprises. We also, at the African Development Bank, have a special flagship called the Agro-Industrial Processing Zones. And this is an initiative to try to bring in a backbone infrastructure, which includes the hard infrastructure, roads, irrigation, electricity, water treatment, and also the soft infrastructure, which includes more of the digital services, the building of, you know, networks between farmers. And we try to create in rural spaces an environment whereby, or a zone whereby, farmer produce is collected, aggregated, and then private sector can invest into these areas because we've de-risked those areas of the infrastructure deficits that might be in specific areas. So this agro-industrial processing zones is something that the African Development Bank has been working on with a number of African governments, and we see a lot of appetite because these African governments know that they should move away from being over-reliant and much more self-sustaining with regards to particular commodities and being able to have the private sector play a role.
And who actually takes out the loan? Is it the government, the leadership of the country, or is it the actual farmer?
It's the government to help the farmers. So as much as possible, we try to ensure that the funds, you know, support ultimately the way our projects are designed are ultimately to support the areas that we're trying to invest in, the farmers that are in that area. But it is the government that borrows.
Do you have any type of system where the smallholder farmer can get a loan on their own?
That's a very good question, Kim. That's something whereby indirectly for farmers that have a track record, that have collateral, that have a credit history, it becomes easier for them to go to either microfinance banks or cooperatives. But in terms of direct support to farmers, I think that's one of the links, Kim, that we're all trying to crack the nut on. I think, you know, what we've seen working is value chain financing, i.e. where we have invested in companies that actually are off-takers for a large group of farmers, and those farmers sell to that company, and therefore that company can allow for advanced credit. So that's one way, instead of using commercial banks, which unfortunately today it's still difficult to lend to the smallholder farmer. So we're trying to use indirect methods and other players within the value chain that can support smallholder farmers.
Yes, I was just thinking about an opportunity so they would not be so dependent on, you know, the government or someone else that perhaps if they had the capital or if they had something that they could use as a collateral for a loan so that they could just work directly with you? And that's, I'm glad to see that you all are have that avenue open as well. So looking ahead into the near future, what do you see are some big opportunities in agriculture in Africa?
In agriculture in Africa, I believe that the biggest opportunities lie in scaling up the achievements when it comes to agricultural productivity, as there have been achievements when it comes to wheat, when it comes to maize, when it comes to rice and livestock. There's been some real gains whereby these gains need to be propagated. That's one. Two, we see huge opportunity in agro-processing and trying to feed the quickly urbanizing population. And, you know, having more and more agro-processors process on the continent so that value is retained in Africa and backward integrating with local sourcing, i.e. that increased local production. And thirdly, the other big opportunity is for governments to really recognize the importance of small, medium enterprise, because these companies are the ones that will generate much more employment and be able to kind of sustain food supply chains as they work through traders, logistics, you know, storage providers. There's a whole series of jobs that can be created through agricultural value chains. So I'm really hoping that when we look at the population growth of Africa, that much more emphasis could be placed in agriculture as a wealth-creating, job-creating sector.
What will Africa's food security look like by the year 2030? And do you think Africa could become a large exporter of food for other countries?
Kim, that's a very, very good question. That's exactly what we do aspire to. Africa does have the land, does have the labor, does have the water. And I think it's about taking those resources and actually increasing productivity. So by 2030, when we talk about food security, one of the things that the African Development Bank is looking at is working with its partners to coordinate, collaborate, to put more financing together towards food security and nutrition, because as you mentioned at the start of the program, if one-fourth of Africa today is food insecure, there's no larger challenge that we have to face, and there's no larger opportunity that is before us when it comes to providing jobs, providing food, and enabling Africa to be much more resilient with regards to its food supply chains.
Yes, and that is something that we can all look forward to. And I just wanted to mention before we wrap up the latest partnership. The African Development Bank and the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development signed a memorandum of understanding to promote sustainable private sector development in Africa. And if you could just touch lightly on that just before we wrap up.
Sure. With partners, we realize private sector investment for private sector development and putting the right enabling business environment will allow more companies to be interested in Africa, because I think sometimes Africa, the perceived risk of investment is much higher than it actually is. And there, and Africa is over 50 countries, different regions, different agroecological zones. So the idea is to get a much more realistic, a much more actual idea of what it means to invest in Africa and to get more companies to do so. The potential is great. The market is great. We need to be able to show that there are opportunities here for private sector to thrive.
Great, and thank you so much. On that note, we're going to have to end this most interesting interview on improving Africa's food systems to ensure food security. My guest is Atsuko Tota, Acting Vice President of the African Development Bank's Agriculture, Human, and Social Capital. Press Conference USA was produced in Washington. I'm Kim Lewis, and be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.